In partnership with Kura KiwiSaver, the NZ Everyday Investor is proud to present News of the Money World, an informative, informal, yet hopefully entertaining look into all the latest happenings in the wonderful, yet often overly complicated world of finance. Catch us live every other Wednesday on Facebook and YouTube. Just follow the NZ Everyday Investor and tune in at 5:30 p.m. sharp. Contribute to the discussion, perhaps even win a prize. As usual, all content is provided on the basis of listener beware. Our views are often our own, but shouldn't be exclusively relied on to make investment decisions. Let's get started. And today we're covering what's a better hedge against inflation. Is it gold? Is it Bitcoin? Is it S&P 500 even? So it'll be an interesting discussion. Inflation isn't a new topic for you and I. We kind of talk about this all the time. So yeah. Firstly, before we get started, congratulations to our lucky listener and watcher of the show. Last time we did this, a fortnight ago, $50 was added to your KiwiSaver. Same thing, just let us know that you're watching and we'll choose one lucky winner to have a $50 credit on us. Well, actually on Kura. Thank you very much, Rupert.
Well, yeah. No, it's great. And look, I think the last person was a 30-year-old, and so that $50 credit, hopefully that will turn into something pretty meaningful by the time they get to 65 and able to retire.
Fantastic. That's the idea. And hopefully our dollars will actually still exist at that age and it'd be worth somewhat what they are right now. So that's kind of like the intro to the concept of inflation. So when we're investing, we need to get a good return, especially if there's times of inflation coming because of this whole thing called purchasing power. So when inflation occurs, then we have a problem with the value that our dollars can hold. So the value that our dollars can hold in the future might be less than today. Therefore, we need to invest. We need to grow the size of it at a rate which exceeds inflation. Is that a good enough definition for why we need to do it? Rupert, what do you think?
Oh, massively. Today, a dollar is worth a dollar. Anyone that's used the Kura KiwiSaver calculators, you'll see our numbers adjusted for inflation. Inflation is running high. That means the dollar is worth less in the future. So our investment dollars need to work even harder to make sure that it's worth more in the future. It's as simple as that. I think someone described it as, today I can buy two Big Macs for one share in A2 Milk. But tomorrow, if I can only buy one Big Mac for that one share in A2 Milk and the share price has stayed the same, then the inflation is carried off and I'm materially worse off. I might be the same on paper, but the fact I can only buy a single Big Mac, that's my issue. So I need my investments to make sure that tomorrow I can still buy two Big Macs.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to throw on the screen the purchasing power of one US dollar. And every year from 1635 to 2020, well, actually, I've got a compressed range here of 1900. From 1900 to 2020, you can see on the screen, sorry for those that are listening in. So even if what we own, which is denominated in dollars, even if what we own seems to be going up, like think about your property values in the last 18 months, your shares, these are Hatch account, your KiwiSaver balances, they've all performed incredibly well. But if you look at that in isolation and you don't actually look at this story here, that as time goes on, there's a general leakage of value from dollars, then you're not seeing the whole story, right?
Oh, well, but actually this chart's fascinating as well, because what this shows is you see that period from 1980 onwards where actually inflation around the world was tamed. And that was the role of when central banks finally got their heads around inflation. And you can see there, looking at hovering on those numbers, dropping from kind of consistently 5 to 10% all the way down to, for the last decade, into that 1 to 2%. And I think that's really interesting. I'd be fascinated to come back next year and see what this chart looks like, where we might be in a much steeper line and a few step changes as well.
Yeah, interesting. Nothing stays static, right? That's the weird thing about investing, or just how the entire global financial system works. By the way, don't ever try and figure it out, right? It's so complicated, man. I try to get my head around it, and it's like the more I look into it, the more I realize that there's no simple answer to how the whole worldwide financial system works.
Oh, look, there's not. And I mean, I think I've said this a number of times on this podcast, and I'll say it every other time in the world as well. that's why being a passive investor is so great, because I don't have to pretend I know what's going on. I mean, there's a reason why hedge funds go boom and bust, right? Because they get a couple of bets right and they believe they've understood the financial system, and they convince a whole lot of investors they've understood the financial system, do really well for a couple of years, and then the next trend emerges and they make the pick, they get the wrong picks. And so that's why being an investor is so hard, and why diversification and setting yourselves up with a balanced portfolio is so important, because the rules always change, the parameters always change. And just when we've thought we've understood what the new normal was, which was low interest rates, low inflation, now we're in a completely different world, and who knows what that means.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. So let me just pull up another graph just for fun. Let's talk about gold. So this is a chart on gold since 1980. Actually, I might just zoom out a little bit here. As you can see, since 1980, there was a huge, huge spike in the price of gold. So gold, for those of you who aren't familiar, are not just a pretty color. It's not just for jewelry. It's an alternative to money, basically. Some gold bugs would view gold as real money, or one of the forms of real hard money. And in 1980 as well, just to use that as a reference point, probably at the tail end of a huge inflationary period, the price of gold skyrocketed. You know, for 1980 money, hitting all the way 678 per ounce and then some. And then it's kind of been flat for a long time. And then recently it spiked up again in 2011, then kind of went through its doldrums. And then probably fairly recently, looks like March 2020, it really started to take off again. But it didn't really kind of take off as much as I would have thought, as I hold my lucky silver coin here in my hand. I would have expected it to go way, way, way more. And maybe it's halfway. Maybe it's just taking a bit of a breather before it takes another leg up. But what can you tell me about this story here? What is this gold chart telling us about inflation, if anything?
Well, I think it's really interesting, right? So what we saw in the late 70s, there were two things that happened there. One is we went through a very high inflation era. But we also saw the adoption of that. We saw the removal of the gold standard. And so all of a sudden, gold became it was its own standard kind of asset class. And I think there's a bit of pricing that happened there where you saw it go from kind of $50, which was, I think, the price of gold when it finally got released from a lot of the currencies, up to, as you say, up to that $600 mark. The next thing we start to see is we see kind of really start to skyrocket in 2006, right, where all of a sudden economy overheating, we've got fears of inflation. It is a real asset and something that can go kind of nuts. And if we bring this back into the previous chart, remember, even though in 1980 the gold was worth kind of $600, in today's dollars that was still only worth about $400. Because the real value had been eroding, as we kind of think about that. But I think what you saw in that period was you saw the value, you saw interest rates go from 4-5%, 6% down to zero. You saw a massive spike in inflation and the inflation concerns around 2010, 2011. And it's really what drove that acceleration as we came out of the global financial crisis, where it was the first time ever in history we'd seen a combination of ultra low interest rates and quantitative easing. And then I think we saw some of that start to unwind in that period from 2011, 12 through to kind of really last year. And the COVID crisis has accelerated that. So my guess, and I'm not an expert in this, I'm not a gold, is that actually what we're seeing with that recent spike of gold, it hasn't been as strong and as pronounced as we would expect, because actually we're already starting off a low base. We're already starting off a base rate of 3-4%, and we've already kind of got our heads around the fact that for the last 10 years we've been printing money and printing huge amounts of money, and we haven't seen the inflation, and therefore we haven't needed gold as the hedge that everyone had initially thought it would be. And I think that's where it gets kind of interesting, where we are right now. It's really been on the last 3 to 6 months that we take the view that inflation is here. Increasingly, the view is becoming accepted among economists that inflation is real. It's not transitory. It's here to stay. But then I think investors just aren't quite sure what that means. We've seen gold rally, but off the back of a 4%, 3% down to 0% interest rates. Is that just not enough of a move?
Yeah, fun times. Like if you're fully into the whole gold space as well, you're probably slightly suspicious that maybe, hey, things are being manipulated here because it didn't seem right?
Yeah, I get that. But then again, a similar point, you come back to long-term. If you think it is a long-term hedge and you think we are about to go through a period of 5 years of high inflation or 10 years of high inflation, and therefore you need gold as that hedge against the underlying cash, then interest rates are the other barometer of that, right? Where you go 10-year US Treasury staying stubbornly in that kind of 1.5 to 1.6% range. And it's actually showing, so if the market and if investors did actually really get their heads around it, inflation was real, growth was real, here for the long run, that 10-year Treasury should be closer to 2.5%, not 1.5%. And so I do wonder whether it's an unusual thing to think about, but actually, are we starting to see a correlation between interest rates and gold there? Because that's also what that chart tells me.
Yeah, interesting. Let's talk about the new form of gold many call it a new form of gold, Bitcoin. I'll pull up on the screen again just that gold chart, because I just actually discovered this right now when I put it up on the screen. If you look at that and you memorize that, so that's the gold chart right there. And again, apologies for those that are just listening in. I'll see if there's a way that I can put a link maybe to this video in the actual audio. So you click on the show notes and you'll be able to watch the video. But if you look at that image right there and then you flip on over to the Bitcoin price, it's an interesting similarity, different time scale, right? So if we look at 2017 to today, that picture of the growth or the price movement of Bitcoin is eerily similar to the chart from 1971 to today. So 4 years in Bitcoin seems to be equal to five decades in gold. Just have a look at the top, right? So we had that peak there, and then it kind of this trough, and then it spikes up again. Then you look at Bitcoin, same story. Everything is happening, but it's happening super freaking fast. So let me ask you this question. I know how you feel about Bitcoin. I'm going to keep on hassling you until you come on over to you get orange pilled and you come on over to the dark side. But what do you think, just as an alternative store of value, as a hedge against inflation, is this telling us that, hey, maybe Bitcoin is the new gold here?
I don't know. The only reason why I'm nervous about that is, what is the characteristic of Bitcoin which is unique and irreplaceable and irreplicable?
Yeah.
Because gold is something where gold is not being produced anymore. It's not as though there's more being made. There is a limited store of it. It's got a use. Admittedly, I'd argue that use, now that it's no longer used as a cash mechanism, is kind of jewelry, and that's slightly dubious. But that's the bit that I kind of struggle with Bitcoin. And if it's not Bitcoin, is it Ethereum or whatever? Is it like, why this, like, if you think about it in the commodity space, it's really gold, to a certain extent silver, and that's about it. Why is it that it will be Bitcoin versus one of the other cryptos? Is that just because it got there first? What is it that gives it the unique characteristics, which I would argue are a unique value, irreplaceable, irreplicable? What are the things that do we think that's replicable in Bitcoin? And I don't know enough to know the answer. My gut says no, but that's because I'm boring and traditional.
You are boring and traditional, but we can help you there, Rupert. We can help you there. This isn't about Bitcoin today, though, but it's something that we'll definitely want to loop back into maybe in the next couple of sessions that we do. But I think that maybe Bitcoin is teaching us something, right? Like, I just look at this and I think, well, maybe it's not so much about applying old paradigms to understand something new. Maybe that new thing that we're looking at in front of the screen right now, maybe that requires a new lens to look at it. Because if I was to guess, I'd say that there's enough people that are willing to pay $63,000 US for something that has no use case or is invisible or is intangible. So it's kind of telling us what's happening to the dollar, not necessarily what's happening to Bitcoin, right?
And I think that's really fair, right? Because I do think if you look at the dollar, I mean, let's be honest, everything that I've just said about Bitcoin and why I struggle to understand why it's a store of value, cash is no different. Let's be honest, the Fed in US dollar terms, or New Zealand, it's the RBNZ, they can make as much money as they want, when they want, how they want. And that is exactly what we're seeing right now. So, I mean, when you kind of look at, is it replicable cash? Hell yeah. Do they just kind of keep on making it? It's kind of, there is only ever going to be one unique store of value. But again, there's lots of different currencies around the world. So you kind of get your head around that. And if the reserve banks and the governments around the world just keep on printing money and they've kind of given up on any sense of fiscal responsibility, I kind of get it. And I go, well, does that actually make Bitcoin any different? Potentially not.
Well, we'll come back. We've got a few questions here that I want to bring up in a second. But the next one that I just want to show you, the next slide here, is of the S&P 500. So as a strategy, and I want to talk about this as a, you're coming from the perspective of maybe a managed fund. And then I want to talk a little bit about individual shares and just draw on a bit of Warren Buffett's knowledge there. So as investing goes, or as a strategy to fight inflation, like I said at the very start, it's kind of really, really important that we do invest. What is this chart? Oh, man, sorry about this. What is this chart saying to us? So are we saying, is this saying to us that, hey, if inflation is coming, the best solution, the best strategy is to invest, because inflation will naturally be offset by the extra gains that you're going to get in the market? Is that kind of what this is saying?
Well, so over the last 100 years, that I read this morning, over the last 100 years, inflation has averaged 3% and the market has delivered an 11% return, or the US market. So that means you've done a net 8% on the way through. Anyone that's listened to us will kind of get, we're firmly of the view that it's really about being in the market rather than trying to time the market. And I think that's really what this chart's showing you. Back in when this chart starts, it looks as though it's kind of early 90s. You're starting off with about $300. Today, that $300 is worth $4,600. Whereas on an inflation-based approach, that $400 is probably worth kind of $800. So you've done really, really well on a real basis. Historically, there's always been that period. Markets have always done well. Have always done well over that medium to long run. I think what is interesting, and this chart does show it, there's really that period of kind of 2000 through to probably 2010-11, which I think is the longest and most elongated period of a market downturn. When you look at this chart over any 100-150-year period as well. So that's, in my mind, a long-term investor, you will always be better off by investing and staying through there. If you go all the way back to the 70s, how far back can you get that?
Yeah, I can go back real far, which is really interesting. So, yeah, no, we can go back pretty far. So,
because if we zoom in on the late, around there, that late kind of 70s area.
Yeah, that's right on the left now, 1970, yeah.
So what you can see there is, you can't really see it because the number's too small, but on my screen I can see it around about 1975, you saw that big dip. And so that's really where you saw markets dropped significantly over a two-year period as the inflation bubble started to kick in. And as you kind of started, all of a sudden some of the weaker companies started falling over, massive issues around valuation as interest rates jumped up. And that's kind of, so what we saw is there was a period of that kind of two-year period where markets really did get hit by the inflation period. But then over the next five to 10 years, you saw a massive rally. And if you'd been invested from start to end, you still would have done significantly better and had a decent real return through that period. But what markets don't like is they don't like the transition period. And that's what we saw there. We saw it in 2011. We saw it in 2016. And that's what I'm most curious about now. We haven't seen that so far in 2021. We saw it a little bit in January 2021 when we saw a little bit of tantrum. But actually, the Fed has been very clear around their intentions, very clear. And increasingly, the market's now expecting 2 Fed rate rises next year. And we still haven't seen the impacts of that hit the market.
Okay. So we're either too soon to see it, or it's been and gone and it wasn't that significant for some other reason. But yep, that's kind of what we saw. So that's interesting. So as soon as that inflation became quite pronounced, it highlighted the weaknesses within the company. Some fell over pretty quick.
So it highlights a lot of weaknesses where you go, anyone that's got no pricing power, anyone that relied, that's kind of high cost base, doesn't have cash flow. It really weaker kind of inflation hammers those that have already got underlying issues. And then the other thing that the inflation does is it means that all your growth companies, so the companies where you're expecting the earnings to happen a long way out in the future, all of a sudden those earnings are worth nowhere near as much as they were previously, because fundamentally those cash flows are going to be deflated by the inflation. So today, in the previous world, so 2 years ago, where we thought inflation was under control and we all struggled to see a scenario where inflation was going to be one more than 2%, you're kind of pretty happy to invest to receive a whole lot of cash flows in 10 years' time, because fundamentally the real value of those cash flows is going to be a little bit less, but not materially less. Whereas today, I'm sitting there going, well, if my inflation number is sitting at 5, 6, 7%, those cash flows in 10 years' time are going to be worth half of what they're worth today. So actually, I'm probably going to prioritize companies and investments that can deliver me cash tomorrow or in the short term rather than in the future.
Okay. And I want to talk about individual companies in a second, and then talk about your active versus passive during high inflationary environments. So we'll come back to that. But I want to bring up on the screen, if I can here, just a few comments. Thanks very much, guys, for listening in, by the way. So we've got Mike Matey. Thanks very much. Good chat. That's great. Andrew Rooney. Hey, if anyone's into drumming, check out this guy on YouTube. Are you into drumming, Rupert?
I am not, but I'm boring and traditional, and so therefore that counts me out of anything fun.
No, you don't hit the cans. You don't buy Bitcoin, man. What is there to you? I'm sure you've got something about you.
I'm going to blame my parents.
There you go. I'm sure you're a good dancer, though. But anyway, yeah, Andrew Rooney, great drummer. If you want to follow his stuff on YouTube, he's a great guy. And then this one here. So James McKenzie asked a really good question, kind of in the context of what we were just saying. Have the market movements over the past 12 to 18 months already priced in inflation, which I think is really interesting, because, you know, when you were saying what you were saying before, it kind of implies that that's a constant throughout. You know, you've got like 3% average inflation, 11% returns net, whatever those numbers were, you're still doing well, but they don't necessarily happen at the exact same time, right? Like, yeah, you might have incredibly insane inflation and low returns, and then they kind of trade places, right?
You can have them both there at the same time, and that's the fear of stagflation. I think it's a great question, James, and that's what I can't quite get my head around. We've seen the market, every time the market kind of has a bit of a tantrum and we have those kind of cratering moments, then, yeah, we think, okay, cool, this is the market pricing and inflation. So what I can't quite get my head around is, have the rules changed? And every time in my career where I've said the rules have changed, I've been wrong. So that always makes me scared. Or is it that this has just been so well signposted and so well communicated by the Fed, who have learned a lot of lessons from what happened in 2011 and again in 2016? Maybe it's a little bit of that there. Or is it just that interest rates are so low that the alternative asset class is not there? I mean, we're still looking at a market where the market's 10-year treasury is at 1.5%. That means the market doesn't actually believe the inflation story. The market doesn't really believe the interest rate story. Most economists are picking a Fed funds rate peaking at 2% through the cycle. So I think there's a little bit of, hey, look, everyone's aware interest rates are going up, but I think it's probably more that the market doesn't actually believe interest rates are going to go up that far. So short answer, probably, as I'm thinking aloud, James, no, they probably haven't priced in the inflation.
All right. Now, let's just think about this from the point of view of an individual investor. And Warren Buffett, look, I think I've said to you before, if there was a granddad that I could choose, and if he'd have me, he'd be mine, I'm taking him. You can have Charlie Munger.
Despite his views on crypto?
That's right. Yeah. You know, I'll deal with him.
I'm pretty sure. You can't have everything perfect.
No, that's right. Well, he came around to Apple in the end, so surely he'll see the light of day, maybe beyond the grave, who knows. But he had some really good tips around investing in individual shares during an inflationary environment, which I think is quite insightful, especially because it teaches you something about how to look at companies. I'm not necessarily a huge fan myself of investing in individual shares. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's fantastic. I just don't have the headspace for it and the time in my life to actually devote to it. But if that's of interest to those who are watching or listening in, it's really important to kind of do your own due diligence on each company. And there's ways, models that you can do that. Do you want to talk me through what this is? I'll pull it up on the screen. This is a letter from 1981, a letter to the shareholders that he wrote. Talk me through this one.
Oh, look, so I think so 1981, inflation coming out of kind of a period of high inflation. And Warren Buffett made it pretty clear. He said a few things in here. And I think this, he made it clear that actually investing in a period of high inflation was actually really hard. And he gave a whole lot of tips and things that they look for and what they believe you need to think through. And so some of the things they talk about was, you've got to have strong companies. You've got to have a company that's got pricing power. And so one of the other most famous Warren Buffett quotes that we all talk about is, you only invest in companies that have a moat and you're not surrounded by competition. And that having a moat is what gives you pricing power. You can continually put price rises through and you're not going to be strangled by competition on the way through. Having very strong cash flow. Because fundamentally, as your costs increase, as you kind of, you see your costs increase, hopefully you can pass that through into your pricing. But at the same time, you need to have cash flow to absorb some of these changes and some of these losses. And a lot of what it comes down to, it comes back to just the old school quality fundamentals. You're investing in a company because they're a strong company, well-managed, strong consumer positions, able to put through price rises, strong cash flows. I think that's really interesting because, so we talk about, have things changed? Does the modern world change? And the answer is no. All of the tips that come out in this 1981 letter are all exactly the same as what you should be looking at today. If you are investing in a company, investing in individual companies, the one thing this letter does say, which I think is actually really interesting as well, is he talks about how, I can't remember what the, oh, that's right. He talks about an ounce of gold and saying, so you could have invested in a Berkshire Hathaway share and that would have given you a quarter of an ounce of gold back in 1975. And today in 1981, it still only buys you a quarter of an ounce of gold, despite the fact that we've invested every single profit, every single dividend, charged no management fees, and given a huge amount of blood, sweat, and tears. So why do we bother? So I think it's typical kind of reality and a great kind of analysis from Warren Buffett, basically saying, I don't really care. There are some things that I have to do to make sure I deliver value for you as my shareholders and things I look out for. But actually what I need to deliver for you guys is real returns. And inflation eats them all up, then I still failed.
That's great. Well, I want to now just pull up another screen on the question because it's a really good timing, Ethan Roberts. Thanks very much, because I wanted to segue into this question. We were talking before we pushed record around what we were earning with our first jobs. And I eventually remembered that I was earning $2.50 an hour at my first job as a dishwasher. And then Rupert, you were telling me what you were earning. What was that again? It was like, what were you earning?
I think I was doing pretty well. I think I was about $8 was my waitering job for temping.
Phenomenal. You're obviously much higher skilled or younger or both.
I think it's definitely not the skill base there, Darcy. It's probably an age one, which we're not allowed to talk about, but yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But the thing is, like, going back to that letter, you know, with what Warren Buffett was saying, having a moat, we don't often think about that with ourselves, right? But if there's something that you do, if there's some aspect of your personality or your career or the value that you add in other people's lives, if you can actually amplify that, if you make yourself indispensable at your place of work and give value before you receive your pay rise, then you have a moat. You now technically have pricing power, just like what you would want to look for when you're investing in an individual company. So I think that's an interesting segue into this question here. So enjoying the videos, can you talk about NZ wages against inflation? Because we've seen assets, we've seen consumer goods. I'm hoping we'll see wages kind of crank up naturally so that things are in balance still. But I know that it's not going to happen all at the same time. What are your thoughts around this one?
It's kind of really interesting what's happening at the moment. So the US Q3 wage data showed that during the quarter, average wage inflation was 1.9% for the quarter. And that's the highest it's been for over 20 years. And so I'm not, unfortunately, I spent too long reading Bloomberg and less time reading the New Zealand media. But look, from what I'm being told anecdotally and from some of the stuff that I'm seeing, it is actually at the bottom of the wage funnel, which is actually doing better out of this internationally. And I think that's happening here in New Zealand as well. Talking to a couple of my old worlds, they're seeing kind of wage inflation at the moment in that kind of, I know one company just put through a 10% wage round because it was the only way they could keep people. So I actually think we are seeing wage inflation coming through with this massive skilled shortage that we are seeing. And I think this is the first time that we've probably seen this in New Zealand since probably for 30 or 40 years, where it's actually wage inflation that's going to hit, and it's going to hit at the lower end of the wage spectrum, which is well overdue and well needed. What does that mean? That means to me, it means it's permanent, the inflation, because you can't undo wage inflation. Once it's there, it's there, and it's going to flow into products. It's going to flow through to things. Let's just hope that it kind of, we do start to seeing that 5, 6, 7% at the bottom. So that when the 5% kind of inflation rates come through, then that works. One of the big quirkinesses of the New Zealand inflation regime, which makes absolutely no sense, it doesn't take into account asset prices, and it, or not asset prices, I get, it doesn't take into account housing costs. And so that's one of the big issues that we are seeing at the moment, is when you've got housing costs going absolutely through the roof, that doesn't take into account what the true living cost increases are. And so, again, unfortunately for most everyday New Zealanders, they might still be getting 5, 6, 7, 8% wage increases at the moment, but that's still not enough to make them go forward because of what we see in housing costs.
Okay. No, thank you. Now, we'll keep on moving on. There's just one more question before we finish up. And this kind of speaks to the whole passive versus active thing, because if you're a passive investor, actually, why don't you tell me, what is the difference between passive and active?
So passive is where you invest methodically. And so you have a strategy, you apply that, and you apply that consistently. Actively investing is where every single investment that you make is an individual decision. You make a decision on the stock you buy, the timing of that investment, the price that you buy it. And it's all about individual decisions, where passively you've made a decision and then you continue to invest methodically.
Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense?
That's perfect, thank you. Because my thinking here is that, hey, if the environment changes, do we need to change our strategy? Like, what do you think? Because of the inflation coming, would an active strategy be more favorable than a passive one?
Look, I think what we've seen over the last 12 months, to me, is reinforced the value of being a passive investor, because it's actually been really, like, it's really, really hard to pick what's happening. You go, one large New Zealand active manager made a huge amount of money back into last year, picking US rates to keep on going up.
Yeah.
And then year to date, their fund is down 20% because they've kind of got that bet and held it on for too long. And so I think, to me, look, it is an uncertain environment. It is difficult, but still getting it right and getting the right bets, it's still no easier. And the markets react in funny ways. We've just spent a long time tonight talking about, are we in a new paradigm? We're not sure if we are. How do we interpret where we're at? And look, most people are more read and more learned, and they've got more analysts than us kind of answering these questions.
Yeah.
But they're still answering the same questions, right? And I think, to my mind, it is no different. Good luck picking what the next trend is and exactly where it's going to go. And that's why having a broad-based passive approach works.
Well, let's leave it there. There's actually a few more questions, some from YouTube. So apologies if you're watching on YouTube and we didn't get to you. Next time we will, I promise. Now, next live recording that we're going to do here on Facebook is on the 17th of November, 5:30 p.m. And don't forget that you can also watch this on YouTube. Just search for the NZ Everyday Investor and make sure that you subscribe.
Can I ask one thing as well? Because one, Darcy and I always kind of come to a scramble on about the a couple of days before thinking about topics. Thank you all very much for the questions. Thank you very much for your engagement. It's what we want. We kind of, as much as I like Darcy, I'd much rather have other people involved as well. But we'd love to get ideas from you guys. If there are topics or things that are happening in the world that you want us to kind of try and tackle, we won't always do a good job. We won't always get there. But please just drop one of us a line. We'd love to hear your ideas on things that you'd like to hear about in these as well.
Well said. Okay, well, we'll finish up right there. That was News of the Money World. Hope you enjoyed that and have a great fortnight. Rupert, we'll catch up with you then.
We'll speak in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Darcy. Thanks, everyone, for contributing.